you might have heard that the Talica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I am Ethan Luck, and this is another edition of Metal Tales from the Road. We're a few days late, but we are going to talk about Cologne, Germany right now. And this is my guest I'm about to introduce, and please forgive me because I'm about to butcher your last name. It is Sasha, is it Middleman? Middleman?
Yeah. Yeah, Sasha Middleman.
Middleman. So it sounds like D's, not T's.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm notorious for butchering last names on the show, and so I do apologize for that. When I looked at your email when we were going back and forth, I was like, oh, I'm in for it. This one's gonna be a tough one. Yeah.
Well, when you announced my name when I like joined as a Patreon supporter,
right.
It came out kind of funny.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I apologize. You know, it's tough. You know, phonetically it's tough because you know, we get so many emails a day and we read them, and then we pick X amount of emails to read on the show. And
Yeah. Sometimes,
you know, Clint will pull the emails, and sometimes I'll do it. And all of a sudden, like, I'll get to his house, he'll get to my house, and we start recording. And I look at the sheet of paper and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how to say this. You know,
yeah,
it can be a little frustrating, but, and also I got to say, I apologize because I just realized as I was going back through our emails to find, your Skype name so we could, you know, get on the phone here. I realized that the entire time I kept saying, hey man, hey dude. So I'm a total asshole, and I assumed this entire time that you were a guy.
Wow.
Did you pick up on that at all? Because I kept saying, I went through and I was like, oh my God, I'm a total jerk.
I was thinking maybe we're in like a post-binary world where, you know, you can call me ma'am if you want.
it's possible, but you know, I mean, I think dude has kind of become a little more just kind of like whatever. Like I have girlfriends that will say, hey dude. But When I was trying to find your Skype name and I saw, sounds good, man, I was like, oh no, like I'm such a dick. Dang it. So my sincerest okay. apologies for assuming that you were a man. I literally know one Sasha and he's from Croatia. And so I think that just popped in my mind and I was like, oh yeah, this is a guy. So.
Yeah, well, when I was in high school, I was known as Girl Sasha because there were like four boy Sashas and then me.
So. Okay. Well, I'll say this. You are now on record. You're now the only Girl Sasha I know.
Yay.
So perfect. Well, so we're square. I won't make this mistake in the future. We're squared away. We can move on with the episode.
Okay.
So you are from Boulder, Colorado, right?
Correct, yes.
Which, crazy, I was just there like maybe 2 months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It might have been before you got into the podcast or something, but the last tour I was on, the last show of the second leg of the tour ended in Boulder.
Oh, where did you play?
We played, I can't remember the name of the theater, but it was the theater on campus there.
On Mackey Auditorium?
Sure. Sounds great. I'm not positive of the name, but it was on campus. Like literally we were like loading into the venue and there was this college students walking around everywhere, you know?
Yeah, it was probably Mackey Auditorium. There's the Fox Theater, which is like across the street from campus.
Right. It was definitely not the Fox Theater. I walked past the Fox Theater later that night. I had a friend that drove in from Denver to come hang out with me, an old friend of mine. Huh. And we ended up grabbing a beer after the show on that main street by the Fox Theater.
Yeah.
But yeah, all that to say, I was in Boulder, and I'm sorry that we weren't already podcast friends before then. Otherwise, we could have gone out and grabbed a beer. Or any other Boulder fans out there.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, till next time for sure.
Yeah.
So let's, after that long intro, we're known for our tangents, but that was the most tangenty intro, I think, on the Metal Tales series. Let's kind of jump into your history with Metallica, when you got into them, your favorite record, the first record you got onto, who got you into them, all those little details. Let's have the Metal Up Your Podcast community hear straight from the source how that all happened for you.
Okay. Well, I got into the band in middle school. I guess I spent much of seventh grade like laying around listening to Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath.
Right.
And wishing that I had a time machine so that I could go back and see these bands in their heyday.
Don't we all?
And yeah. And so then I would, you know, I was into like checking out videos of their, of like music performances from Blockbuster and like reading biographies about like any rock bands I could find at the public library. And then, so, you know, I dedicated a lot of time to that because what was like on regular radio at the time was like New Kids on the Block and,
yep,
you know, Technotronic and
Technotronic. And what a deep cut. Jeez.
Yeah.
Nice work.
So I wasn't feeling that. Yeah. And, you know, like my Puerto Rican friends were listening to Menudo and I was like, that's not for me. So, but then the summer after seventh grade, I guess it must have been 1988 or 89.
Mm-hmm.
I went. My dad had to work in Colorado that summer. So we spent the whole summer like house sitting a parent, like his friend's house, and they had two teenage sons. So I was staying in one of the teenage sons' bedrooms, which was like a total like adolescent boy man cave, and had like had like Iron Maiden posters on the walls and stuff that I thought were kind of scary at the time.
Right. Yeah.
But as the summer wore on, I like, you know, I got into going through the boys' shit, and
By the way, you're describing my studio exactly right now.
Really?
My studio is basically like what my room should have looked like as a seventh grader, but with more guitars.
Yeah, that's kind of what my basement looks
it's
like.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That's
all right. Sorry, continue.
Oh no, it's okay. So, So I started going through his stuff and listening to his music, and he had the first four Metallica albums. And I started, you know, listening to them and really fell in love with them, particularly Ride the Lightning. And also they had cable, which we didn't have at my house. So, and
nice.
One video was playing that summer a lot. And
nice.
I thought the video was like really, like it creeped me out, but I loved watching it.
Yep.
Cause I liked watching them play. So I like rode his bicycle to Radio Shack or whatever and bought tapes so that I could dub a lot of his albums and then, you know, brought them back, brought them home with me listening to Metallica on my like yellow Sony Walkman on the school bus.
Oh, I miss those
and
things.
Yeah.
The ones that were basically they were basically like marketed as being like water resistant.
Right.
Because you like put the tape in, you close the hatch, put the little clip on it. So it seemed like, okay, I can dunk this thing in water for a second. It'll be fine. My Master Puppets cassette is still going to play.
Yeah. So I actually still have mine. It's like right next to me right now.
Wow. Does it still work?
Because no, not really. But you want to know what album is in it?
I do.
It's Wu-Tang Clan Forever.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with Wu-Tang. They just played Nashville like a few nights ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they're playing at Red Rocks in October.
Oh, nice. So a little fun fact, Wu-Tang just played, for those that maybe know the famous venue in Nashville called the Ryman Auditorium, Wu-Tang played there, I wouldn't say 4 or 5 nights ago, but they are the first hip-hop act to ever play the Ryman.
Oh, it's wow.
For years and years, it was like a country music venue. Then like it started to evolve. And then like rock bands would play there, Americana, whatever. But they're the first hip-hop act to ever play there. Kind of cool.
Wow.
And that's the
have
same
cassette. Have you ever seen them live?
I've never seen them live.
Well, and neither have I, because they were supposed to play with Metallica at Lollapalooza in 1996, but
right.
They didn't show up.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm a, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this much on the show, but I am a big hip-hop lover.
I am too.
Have been for a long time. I think that's one of those beauties of being a music fan in general. Like, you don't get stuck to one style of music. Like, of course, Metallica is, you know, my favorite band right next to The Clash. But hip-hop, I got into at an early age. So for me, it's like, you know, I love Outkast, Public Enemy, Eric B. and Rakim, a lot of the early 80s stuff, you know, KRS-One. What about you? What are some of your favorite hip-hop acts?
Well, I love Wu-Tang, but I also, you know, like the Beastie Boys.
Yes.
Like, albums were all coming out when I, you know, in pretty formative years for me in my adolescence, so they'll always occupy a special place.
Absolutely should.
Yeah, and then I, you know, listen to a lot of, like, old school, and a lot of, like, conscious hip-hop in my, I don't know, in my youth, I guess.
Yeah,
and,
nice.
Yeah.
Did we just become best friends? That's awesome. Yeah. No, that's cool. I'm a big fan of hip hop, and it's always cool to talk to somebody else that you know, we share the love of Metallica and that whole culture and that family, but you know, it's cool to talk to people where, you know, your taste does expand beyond what this whole podcast has, you know, done and brought people together in regards to. But that's awesome, man. I'm so excited to hear your taste in hip hop. That's rad. I hope you get to see Wu-Tang. Are you going to go to the Red Rock show?
Yeah, I think I will. And I just, like, I've heard that, like, with 9 members on stage, that it can be kind of messy, but I still want to see them.
You have to see them, for sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, okay, so, again, there we go. Another tangent in the books. Let's continue on. So we were at the Walkman.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So, which I, like, just found because my parents are moving out of their house, so they made me clean out my, like, childhood bedroom that they're not, I guess they don't want to keep as a shrine to me. So, so I found it and I was like, oh, this. So I brought it back to Colorado with me.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyway, so when I was in 8th grade, the Black Album dropped, and there were a lot of amazing albums that came out in 1991. But, I mean, it was really exciting to have a new album when I was at that age, you know?
Totally.
And yeah, it was pretty, like, formative time. And also, I loved watching the videos from it, like, especially the Sad But True video. And,
for sure.
You know, I was 8th grade, so my, like, I think that video came out when I was in 9th grade. But nonetheless, it, like, set my little adolescent heart aflutter for Metallica.
Also, at that point, I mean, videos were pretty new for Metallica. I mean, the only video we had was one, so...
Exactly.
When that Black Album came out, like, you know, I think I'm close to your age. You know, I think that album came out when I was in 7th grade. You know, every video that came out, especially when my family got MTV at home, it was like, oh my God, like everything you could see. We didn't have the internet, so it was like any little bit you could see was like, oh my God, I'm getting a little bit further glimpse into this band that I'm so fascinated by.
Yeah, totally. And then on the album, Sad But True hadn't been, like, one of my favorite songs, but when I watched the video, I was like, oh my God.
Totally.
Like, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So
that was, I think, kind of solidified my Metallica fandom, but...
That's amazing.
But then, like, you know, in high school, my musical taste broadened. I got, you know, like we talked about, I kind of got a lot more into hip hop, but also, you know, I couldn't afford to go see Metallica play at like a giant stadium or, you know, get my parents to take me or whatever. But I lived in New York. So a lot of like the New York, like hardcore bands were very accessible to me.
Right.
So I started going to see like Agnostic Front, the Cro-Mags and stuff like that.
Madball and stuff.
Yeah. So I moved to DC and got really into, you know, DC hardcore.
Man, this is amazing.
Stuff like that. But, you know, I still like, you know, like you can drift apart from a band and still love them. And there was a time when a lot of people were saying, well, I used to like Metallica, but I would never say that. I'm like, I love Metallica.
Of course. You know? Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah. And then, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I think sometimes people will say that, like, I used to like Metallica, but a lot of times people will come back on the ride after so many years, you know, like I might have tapped out for a little bit, but I wasn't tapping out on their entire catalog. It was like, okay, Load and Reload. It's a little weird for me at the time in high school.
Yeah, totally.
When I'm getting into like punk rock and ska and reggae.
But
I'm still in love with Master of Puppets and Injustice for All and stuff like that. And then, you know, it just kind of comes full circle. All of a sudden I start revisiting those records and it's like, okay, I'm back on the train, you know? And now,
definitely,
you know, being 40 years old, I'm like, I can't imagine ever even coming close to like sticking my foot out of the train door at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And they just, like, you know, I just always circle back to them, you know?
Right.
They, like, I go through, I get on a Metallica kick periodically. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, when the Loads came out, that was when I was in college. It was kind of like they were going through an awkward stage, in my opinion. But, you know, it's like, if your sibling goes through an awkward stage, you still love them, right?
Sure. I get that. Well, so how do you feel about the Load and Reload now?
Well, thanks to your podcast, I've been revisiting it and giving it, like, you know, further listen. And then seeing the couple shows that I saw this summer, certain songs that, like, I didn't like the studio version sound so much better live that
right.
I feel differently about it.
That's cool.
Like Memory, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, great. That's a great example. That or Fuel. I mean, those are really the only two that are kind of playing from those records. Or really, that's just from Reload.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think, you know, and Clint and I have talked about this on other episodes. You know, I think the older you get, your tastes change, sometimes dramatically, but sometimes just a little bit, where you might have not really been into Load and Reload, but then you start to kind of come around to it. And you know, maybe before Load and Reload, you were like, I'm just a thrash metal person, like. In the Black Album was cool, but, like, so then you get older and you're like, I like a lot of different stuff. You know, me and Clint are that way, where we listen to, we have a pretty wide, you know, eclectic taste in music.
Yeah,
which I think why is I you know, over the years I've come back around to those records.
Yeah. And they stand the test of time, you know?
Yeah, they totally do. They absolutely do. Well, that's awesome. Continue.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, in the Load time, I think one of the thing that really put me off those albums was that freaking video for Until It Sleeps. it was like, what are they doing in a Bjork video? And why is James Hetfield rubbing duty on his face? Like, it made me cringe.
Right.
So, like, I kind of. You know, I found that to be a bit off-putting at the time.
At the time, it is a little weird for sure. Now, so I'm of the point where now I really love that video. I think, you know,
really?
You know, they're making, you know, artistically, I think it's a beautiful video. At the time, I was like, whoa, this isn't the Enter Sandman video or the Sabbath True video or, you know, whatever. At the time, it was weird. It was different, you know. But what I love about Metallica is that, you know, they weren't letting somebody tell them to do this. Sure, they had, you know, maybe a director that had a treatment for the video that was like, here's my idea. But, I mean, they had to sign off on it, and they were on board, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a bold thing to do back then.
Yeah. And I guess I felt like when those albums came out, like if I wanted to listen to grunge, I would listen to grunge, you know.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't that into it, but now I don't know. I feel like I need to give it further consideration.
You know what, Sasha, I think the older you get, the heavier those records get in my opinion and my taste. You know, now when I hear Until It Sleeps, you know, or Fuel or whatever, now I'm like, man, this is so much better than when I first heard it.
Yeah.
So yeah, whatever. I would encourage you to maybe, or have you listened to our Unload episode yet with Paul Moak?
I listened to the beginning of it when I was on the plane, and then I dozed off.
That's okay.
Not because it was boring, but just because it was the middle of the night.
Well, you're also traveling back from Germany and probably jet lagged and stuff. But when you do get a chance to listen to the end of the full episode, we obviously, the goal is to narrow down our favorite 14 songs from the two records. Maybe start with revisiting those records by just making a playlist of those 14 songs in whatever order you want. Check that out and then dip in a little further.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's my homework for you. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. And I downloaded both the albums, like, so that I could listen to them on the trips,
right.
But I didn't. And so, you know, I listened to them a little bit, but I need to give it some real, some real thought.
Hey, I agree. I think you should. I think, you know, obviously at the end of the day, your mind will be made up and whatever you like is what you like. But these records are what, 25 years old at this point, you know, it's almost, almost 25 years old. And we're older too, and our tastes have changed. So, you know, I think if you really dip in with an open mind, I think you're going to like a lot of things that maybe you didn't think you liked before.
Yeah, and also at 42, like, I don't have to be cool and above it all, you know? Like, I can't, I don't feel like I need to, I don't know. Like, when I was younger, I sort of, like, would sometimes reject things and be like, right. Yeah, I don't like that, you know?
Listen, so. Sasha, listen, we're in our 40s. We have zero people to impress.
Exactly. I'm already, like, far cooler than your average 42-year-old because I...
I hope I am
in Ireland and Germany.
I mean, listen, you just traveled to Germany to go see Metallica. I think you're at least cool in my eyes. So,
thank you.
Well, maybe let's start getting into this whole journey to Germany because there's not. I mean, there are a fair amount of people, but in the grand scheme of things, not a lot of people that are actually traveling overseas just to go see a show and come back.
Well, I didn't go just to see the show and come back.
Well, but you saw one show.
I saw two shows.
Oh, you did? Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went to the Slane Castle show, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. Well, actually, so I went to Europe. I was already planning to go to Europe to do this trail running trip, to do some trail running in Spain and France, and I was supposed to do some trail races. And then I was so I'm a school psychologist. I work at a middle school, and I was having this conversation with some seventh graders. And they were trying to convince me that Billie Eilish is cool. And I'm like, all right, tell me what you like about her.
I'm going to back those seventh graders. I'm going to see her on Friday.
Really?
Yes. I think her record's awesome. Again, open mind.
Come around. Okay. So here's where the discussion went. I was like, well, what do you like about her? You know? And they were showing me her videos, and I'm like, I don't know, this first song is kind of about fighting. The second song is about, seems to, like, glorify mental health holds. And the third one is about, like, sounds like it's about suicidality. And I'm like, I don't know if I like these themes. And I was like, well, wait a minute. You know, Seek and Destroy is about fighting. And
did you maybe feel like
about suicidality and like sanitariums about mental health? So I was like, I shouldn't be such a curmudgeon, you know?
Did you maybe as their teacher, did you maybe feel like maybe your parents did when you were listening to Metallica?
Yeah, I had this moment where I was like, okay, I'm becoming a curmudgeon, you know? So I had to so then, you know, as I discussed with them, like, I was kind of pleased that they have like a female voice to express the same things that, like, you know, sure. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, male voices for over the years.
Of course,
I kind of respect that, and I kind of appreciate that. So,
well, let me tell you,
they convinced me.
I am a huge fan of female singers, and I would like the tables to turn where there was more female voices than male voices in the music world, personally, because I think they're just so beautiful. And I could do a whole episode on my favorite records that are fronted by females, and I would have a ball doing that because it's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm happy that they have her, and I can see how much she means to them. So I thought that's pretty totally. Cool. But anyway, that conversation sparked me to think, Metallica toured the U.S. last year. Like, does that mean that they're touring Europe? So I looked up their tour schedule, and lo and behold, they're going to be in Europe when I was. And I'm like, wow, I could definitely see at least one show. So,
so you were already planning on being there for this run?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I chose Cologne because I was like, well, you know, it just kind of made sense with what I was planning to do.
True.
And I was like, I can take a Ryanair flight there and I'll go see the show. And it's going to be awesome. So I made those plans, but then I noticed that they were playing at Slane Castle and I kept thinking about that. And coincidentally, the custodian from my school was going to Scotland on this like family heritage discovery thing. I don't know. He's going to be in Scotland.
That's cool.
So I was like, Tom, you need to go see Metallica at Slane Castle. And he's like, you need to go see Metallica at Slane Castle. And I was like, I can't. I'm supposed to do a race that day. And he's like, all you ever do is run. And I was like, fair point. So
also to Tom's credit, there is plenty of space to run at Slane Castle. If you want to get those miles in, you can do it.
Not when you're on the rail for 9 hours.
Well, but you get there early and you just run around the grounds for a while, get those miles in, then hit the rail.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, and it was like miles getting from the bus to the rail. So I got plenty of exercise.
Okay, good.
But it was, but so anyway, I was thinking about it over the weekend, and then I emailed him. And I'm like, okay, I totally want to go. And he's like, well, good, because I already bought you a ticket.
So. Oh, wow. Way to go, Tom.
Yeah. I know. It was awesome. And so that we had like such a good time at that show. We were like, we went super early. We were all the way like center stage in the front. And so, and it was so much fun. I was like, it couldn't be any better than that, you know? Yeah. So when I was leaving, I went to London to visit friends in between. And then I went to Cologne. And I was like, you know, I was like feeling a little bit like, I was like, is this, you know, this is going to be good. Like, I'm excited that I'm going. But at the same time, it can't possibly touch the experience I just had. So.
Right.
But.
But Cologne is amazing.
But Cologne blew my, like, was even better, I think. So. Right when I got off, so I, you know, flew to Cologne, and then you have to take a little train to the city center. So right when I walked out, I was, like, kind of walking in circles trying to figure out on Google Maps which way I should go. And then meanwhile, there's this other woman doing the exact same thing, and she's wearing, like, the patchy, like, metal vest.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, looks like we're on the same program. I was like, I can't figure out which way I'm going. Which way did we exit? And I was like, are you going to the show? What about? We start talking. As we're walking out of the train station, we're, like, making all these plans to go to the like warm up party together, and then, you know, meet up for the show. And it was so great because I just met her there. Her name is Adriana, and she's from Bulgaria. And
oh,
she's
that's like, amazing!
I know, she's like my new best friend. It was so great because I've always wanted female metal friends, and I've never had them.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, we have plenty that listen to our show. You got to become friends with Sarah Sobeck, with Anya, with Gene Froman. We got some. We got a bunch.
I would love to.
Yeah, I mean, they're not. So, they're not in Boulder. The ones that I just listed, but sure. But you could have some good online friends.
Yeah, I would love that. So we went. So you know. So we you know went to our separate hotels, but then went to the warm up party, mm-hmm. And she's like, "We're you know." So we went to the Enter Night. The beer party thing.
Right, yeah.
And she's like, they're giving away, they're raffling off tickets to the Snake Pit. If I get Snake Pit tickets, you're coming with me. And if you get Snake Pit tickets, you're taking me.
Nice.
Like, deal. So we went and we're like drinking as much beer as we can because we're trying to get as many tickets as we can.
Okay. Good
which
plan.
Which emboldened me a bit. But
sure.
And we, you know, while we were there, met some people who were I guess on the staff of the band.
Okay.
And they had some like, you know, friendly connections, and one of the people was kind enough to offer us Snake Pit tickets.
No
even
way.
If we didn't win them. Yeah.
So you didn't even
we got to go.
So you didn't even have to drink that much beer. You just eventually got the tickets.
Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome.
Did you?
Did you? Tom bought tickets for Sandcastle. So when you bought these tickets,
yeah.
Were you? Mm-hmm. Did you just buy like GA tickets, or were you seated?
I actually bought the because like a lot of or because everything but the experiences were sold out.
Right.
I bought the like shortest straw package.
Oh, cool! But that doesn't include Snake Pit.
No, it doesn't.
Until you go to the pre-party, and then all of a sudden you win them. Or not, you won them. You just got, they were just handed to you because you met somebody who worked for the band.
Yes.
That's so great. Awesome.
Yes, it was wonderful. I'm so grateful. And then we saw like a Metallica cover band that night that was so good.
Really?
And
nice.
Which is really weird. Which is a really weird thing to do the night before you go see actual Metallica, but it was fun nonetheless.
Oh, that's great. It gets you hyped up.
Yeah, it does. So then, you know, the next day we met up to go to the show. So Adriana and I were on the train platform, unable to read the instructions for buying a ticket for the tram. And this nice guy from Wales named James Arnott, he helped us figure it out. And then we rode on the tram. We were talking with him the whole time. And he'd been to like 40 something shows.
Wow.
But had never been in the Snake Pit. And it turned out, and as it happened, I had 3 passes. So he became our new best friend.
Wow.
And I got him in and I felt really good about that. It was really nice.
That's amazing.
And then, And then I guess he's a bit of a celebrity in the Metallica forum. Because when we walked into the venue, we met this really nice couple from Thunder Bay, Canada, named Mike and Lindsay, and it was Lindsay's 40th birthday.
Oh,
and
nice.
They recognized James from the Metallica Forum, and so they started chatting with us, and they were super nice, so I had this, like, really nice crew to see the show with and to discuss afterwards, compare notes with, prepare to report back. So
nice.
They're awesome.
So,
yeah.
So before the show has even started, it sounds like your trip has already more than exceeded your expectations.
Yes, because I went by myself and I was like, I'm just going to be by myself, but it's going to be great, but it's not going to be as great as Slane. It ended up being, like, phenomenal.
That's amazing. So, well, you know, that's...
And I met these... Yeah.
I was going to, you know, I was going to say that, that's, you know, the power of this band is they have these fans that have been fans for so long, and you know, you get older, you maybe get less angsty as a metalhead, and all of a sudden you're this, not that a metalhead can't be a kind person, but I feel like the older we get, the more we like to reach out to people and help people. And me and Clint have noticed this with the podcast and meeting friends and going to shows around the South. Is that people look out for each other. And, you know, you've met these people on this one solo trip to Cologne, Germany. All of a sudden, you've got this new friend. All of a sudden, you meet this other dude, and you're all in the snake pit together, and everyone's, you know, you're giving your extra ticket to him. It's just amazing. Yeah. It's a great story, and I think it's a powerful statement to the power of Metallica and in bringing people together.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, James Hetfield always, well, they all always talk about the Metallica family.
Yep.
And I guess, you know, to me, I felt like, previously felt like I was kind of like, I don't know, like maybe a little bit played out because a lot of the, like, races that I do talk about, you know, where the, you know, Leadville family, stuff like that. But I really, like, hit home going to the show where I just felt like people were so... Because, like, we were, like, instant friends because we were, you know, psyched enough to travel to see this show.
Well, it's one common bond.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then also, especially with a band that's been around so long, like, if, you know, you're still listening to them, you know, then you know that you've had a shared experience, you know, already.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's great. I mean, it continues to blow my mind, you know, the between the emails we get and going to shows or when Clint and I have toured separately with our respective jobs and met up with fans on the road and stuff. It's like, this is mind blowing. I mean, I can't think of another band that I've, you know, gotten so deep in with where I've actually made friends because of a band. You know, maybe that happened in high school, maybe college age. You know, oh, you like Bob Marley too, or you like The Clash too? Great. But this is something where it's just like, wow, like I've made long-lasting friendships just because of this one band that's put out 10 records, you know, in the course of 36 years, whatever it is now. It's crazy. It really is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I know. And like, we haven't even, it just sort of gives me chills actually, because after the show, we, you know, we went to some bar and like talked for hours about it afterwards.
Right.
It's just like, so like, you know, connect with people that readily is, you know, something to treasure, because I think, you know, you get into your 40s and a lot of people don't make new friends that quickly at this age, you know.
Well, let me tell you, I have made a lot of new friends because of this podcast
in the
2.5 years we've done this, which I'm so grateful for. It's awesome. But you're right. Yeah. You know, normally you get in your 40s, like you might make some new friends here and there, but like at this point in your life, you probably have a core group of friends that you're tight with, and you have a good community. You know, you're going to rely on each other and be there for each other for a long time. But you know, like I mentioned Sarah Sobeck earlier, you know, she's become a really good friend of the show, and we've hung out with her and her husband Pete numerous times to the point now where there's like a really good connection, you know. And Sarah's even,
awesome.
You know, gotten close with my wife and stuff. It's like, it's just, it's amazing. And it's all it all stemmed from this band we love called Metallica.
Yeah. That's really
awesome.
Yeah. It's especially noticeable, like all the black ticket holders, how they all know each other and we're like, you know.
Oh, they're like.
Just like running up to each other.
Those are the cool kids for sure.
Definitely.
You're a black ticket holder. You are one of the cool. You're sitting at the cool lunch table for sure.
For sure.
but I will say this about the black ticket holders: they will look over at the rest of us and bring us into the cool table. That's how good the Metallica fans are. Like, they might be sitting at the cool lunch table with their black ticket. But they'll look over at the rest of us and be like, hey, dude, come on over, man. Come hang out with us. We're all the same. We're all equal. Yeah. You know, it's awesome.
That's super inclusive, because my James and Adriana are both black ticket holders. And they're like, I had such a great time with them.
That's so awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Well, let's get into the show. First of all, I'm insanely jealous you got to see a show in Cologne, Germany. I've been there a couple times on tour. It's one of the most beautiful cities I've ever been to in my life.
It's pretty cool.
It's amazing. I mean, I don't know how much exploring you got to do outside of going to see Metallica, but it is an incredible city.
Yeah, I went for some runs there. Yeah, good. It's beautiful.
I think we've all gathered that you run everywhere.
I do.
Good.
It's kind of my thing.
Sasha has 0% body fat. She runs to the airport, hops the plane.
True.
She runs to baggage claim, runs to her cab, and runs to the hotel. You're a runner.
You run a lot.
Good.
I am.
I need to run more. So kind of walk us through, like, day of the show, meeting up with your friends, going to the venue, and kind of what kind of went down.
Yeah. So we got there, and they had, like, you know, we had to enter with the shortest straw, and black ticket holders, like, enter the same way. So okay. I was walking in with the two of them, which was perfect. And then they give us your bag of swag. I don't know if they give you the same stuff at every show, because I didn't have the package or anything for Slane Castle, but
right.
In my bag was like some like janky sunglasses with an M on the side, and a Quidditch scarf, or like a soccer scarf that says Metallica on it.
Did you say Quidditch?
Yeah, it looked like the scarves they wear in Harry Potter.
I was pushing up my glasses if I would actually wear them. I love the nerdum there. Thank you. And then we went into the Gryffindor house.
Well, it's kind of like that in Germany. There's some of the iconography of Germany kind of reminds me of that. But
yeah, for sure.
And I had just been at a castle. But anyway, so it was really nice when we got to go. So the person who hooked me up with the sneak peek, wristbands met mm-hmm. up with us. We hung out for a little bit, and then I went into the snake pit, and there was like nobody in there, which surprised me. I mean, for Ghost, there was like hardly anybody in there.
Okay.
But we got to like stash our stuff, you know, behind the like security guy's perch. So it was really nice that I didn't have to deal with carrying my poster and whatnot during the show. Cause that had been like my big concern, like about this shortest straw package. Like, yeah, I really want to go to the show and I really want to get in, but what am I going to do with a poster all night? How am I not going to squish it?
Yeah, you know? Totally.
So we found a little corner to stash him in, and that was awesome. And then Ghost was really fun. And I have to say, they sounded a lot better in Germany than they did at Slane Castle for some reason. I feel like they're getting tighter maybe.
Okay.
And I'd seen them once before, actually, a long time ago in Finland. And they sounded, you know, really strong compared to the first time I saw them.
Yeah.
But they really suffer from performing in the daylight. You know, Europe is just like further north than you realize, because the sun sets super late. And, you know, for the like drama and everything of the costumes and the, it's, you know, a bit is lost for sure, seeing him in broad daylight.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I'm sure a lot of the production can be a bit lacking because of the daylight. You know, you have everything from lights to pyro, whatever they're using exactly, you know, looks best when it's dark out.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same effect without, you know, in the broad daylight.
Right.
So I'm going to see them in September, on September 30th and October 1st. So it'll be fun to see what it's like, in the dark. When I saw them the first time, it was in daylight too, because it was in Finland where it doesn't get dark.
Yes, that's much further north as well. So
yeah.
Well, it'll be cool to see them. Are you seeing them in Colorado?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be great too.
Super random venues too.
That'll be great too, because it's going to be their own show. So I'm sure their production and the whole, you know, aesthetics of the show will be way different than what you just saw.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. And Adriana and I were like the only people who were just like dancing, and some people were looking at us like, "What are you doing?" Like, they're kind of like, "Who dances?" We do. Yeah.
Hey, you do you. You dance if you want to.
it was fun.
If we've all learned a lesson from Dirty Dancing, listen. Or why am I blanking on right now?
Flashdance. No.
Not Flashdance. Kevin Bacon.
Footloose.
Let them dance.
Yes. Let them dance. So we had a good time dancing, even though everybody else was just sort of observing us awkwardly. And so it was really fun. Then, you know, when they changed the set over, it was time to start. Like, the tension was building. More people came into the snake pit. But even when everybody came in, it wasn't all the way full, which was so nice. I was expecting to be, like, squished. You know, whenever you have a good view, you just accept that you're going to be a sardine.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly spacious in there.
That's great. Well, plus you had a spot on the rail already, so you're stoked.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So then we got a spot in the front corner, but I could, like, move to the back to go see them when they're playing on the back part of the stage, you know, for the first few songs. Mm-hmm. So it was like the best of all worlds in that sense.
Awesome.
Except that, you know, later in the show when they're, like, all on the front, there were definitely chunks of time where I was looking at their butts for a while.
Hey-o.
Standing in front of me.
Yeah, that's just where they stand, you know, when they're doing, like, Creeping Death and Seek and Destroy. It's like they're kind of on the outside of that big ramp facing the majority of the crowd. So you have no choice. Right. You have no choice.
Yeah. But what I appreciated was that they interacted with the snake pit a lot more than I anticipated. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. But so they started with Hardwired, of course, which was really tight and fast, and the energy from the crowd was palpable. Like, it was intense.
Awesome.
And, you know, I lost my voice that night. Like, it's good that we're talking today rather than yesterday, because I still sounded, like, pretty ragged yesterday.
Were you sounding like Tom Arias today, like, or Dave Mustaine's, like, and then they went into Hardwired.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you did that voice, because I think I listened to the podcast just to hear you guys do your impression of Dave Mustaine.
And then we went to Hogwarts, and it was so fun. They let us into Hufflepuff.
Go on.
No, you go on. We're talking about the set list now. What was next?
Okay, next was Memory, which was kind of a surprise, because I think a lot of people were anticipating Fuel, but because they played Memory at Amsterdam. But it was good, and that's, like, you know, a good example of a song that I thought it was amazing live, whereas, you know, like I said, I hadn't, like, paid enough attention to the album previously, you know. And
I mean, Sasha, how good is it at the end of the song when they go into the whoa, whoa, whoa?
Yeah, and the crowd participation.
I know, just from talking to you on this episode, I know that you got chills, and you were, like, probably...
I got chills, that's just what I was going to say.
Probably dancing, probably running... in place. And you were so stoked on that song.
Yeah, I really was. Like, I see it in an entirely different light.
Good.
After seeing it live. Yeah. And that's, you know, I love that too. Like, I think there are quite a few songs that now that I've seen them live, I love so much more than I did, you know, on the album.
That's a really good thing about live music, is that there's whether it's a certain record, a certain song, or maybe even a certain band, might not be into a certain thing. I just, you know, a certain aspect of the band. And then you go see them live, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, like, I never really, like, listened to it this way. Now I'm going to go back and listen to the record, and it's going to take on a whole new meaning.
Yeah. And plus, like, you know, they talk about, like, the 10,000 hours of practice or whatever.
Yeah.
For the amount of time that they've toured, like, I think they've, you know, they know what works live, and certain things just, you know, but do it a little bit differently than they did on the album. And it just sounds so good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny. During this, James said, and my friend, Mr. Hammett, and gestured to the left, but Rob was there.
Oops.
And then, like, James just, like, looked, like, confused for a second, and then just gestured, you know, to the left.
That's awesome.
That was a little bit funny. Yeah, and then they went into Ride the Lightning, which was really good. Except Kirk kept getting his jacket caught on his guitar, and it was kind of amusing to watch him, like, wrestle with it and still play this, like, you know, blistering.
Right, exactly. So. Well, it's kind of it's fun to see these guys. You know, they're all in their 50s now. It's fun to see them kind of. you know, they still have the human aspect of a live show. They're not playing to tracks, you know, they're not playing to a click. Mm-hmm. Nothing is ever perfect, and that's what I love about their live shows.
Totally. That's what makes even it exciting.
Even if it's Kirk getting his jacket stuck on the guitar or batting down a drone from the sky with his guitar, whatever. You know, I love the imperfections of their shows.
Definitely. It just makes it exciting, right?
Yeah.
So, but then when everyone was chanting hey and shaking their fists, it was a little unsettling seeing thousands of Germans chanting, and because, you know, I'm half Jewish, so I was like, I just can't really, I can't think about that too hard. But especially during the die chant later, I'm like, eh. But
okay.
Think about it.
Sure.
You know?
No. I see where you're going for sure. But you got to remind yourself, this, everyone's there in the name of Metallica, you know?
Totally.
Everyone there is your friend.
Everyone there really was my friend, though. That's the thing. Everyone was so nice. It was so wonderful. Yeah, it was really good. And then they went into King, which was super heavy. It was really good. There was a lot of interaction with the snake pit. James Hetfield was coming by giving fist bumps, and I got to get a good look at his hand, which I've kind of always wanted to see, because I've always wondered if he had like scars from when he like walked into the pyro.
For
some reason, that's something I've always wondered about, so getting a good look at his hand was like kind of exciting for me.
So what was your conclusion? Did you see any scars?
No.
Okay.
No, but I just wanted to know, like, it's something I've always wondered about. Yeah,
you gotta take an analysis of the situation and make a conclusion for yourself.
I know. And the thing is that now that I know, I've always wondered, like, since he lives in Colorado and I snowboard at Vail a lot, conceivably I could be on a chairlift with him or something, you know, someday. And I've always wondered what stupid thing's going to come out of my mouth if I do ever cross paths with him. And probably I would have been like, do you have scars from when you walked into the pyro? And so now I don't have to worry about accidentally asking.
It'll be that, or you'll be like, do you like Burton snowboards? it'll be a total blank, you know, like when you meet your you know, a big celebrity or one of your icons. It's like that Chris Farley sketch with Paul McCartney. Like, you remember when you're in the Beatles?
Yeah, it's totally going to be. I'm just going to choke and not say anything.
Do you like snow?
Yes, exactly. I mean, if anything comes out of my mouth, that'll probably be it. But
right.
I thought, like, you know, best case scenario, I was gonna blurt out, do you have scars on your hands? Because I've always wondered.
He'd be like, race me down the hill and I'll tell you.
Yeah, I would probably beat him. So that was really fun. But of course, I didn't get any fist bumps because I'm short and there were a lot of tall people.
Okay.
My arms aren't long enough. But then they went into, then was, came Unforgiven.
Mm-hmm. Always a good one.
Yeah, and he had Carl, his guitar made from the floor of their studio.
Which quick side note, if I may interrupt for a second, our mutual friend of the podcast, I don't know if you probably haven't met him, but Chris Yurgis, we've talked about him a lot. He provided our Metallica mini museum at our anniversary party. He just had dinner with Torben.
Oh no!
Yes,
really?
He it was a part of the charity event last year, and he bid on dinner with Torben and won. But check this out. This is amazing. We're gonna have him on the show to talk about it. He just posted some stuff on Facebook about it and said it was just the most amazing experience, and they were so kind and amazing and great to him. And but he so where, you know, the Carlson Street house where they wrote Ride Lightning and Master of Puppets, the garage that was there that Carl is made out of, there's now like a guest house there now, and it's an Airbnb, and he stayed there.
Ooh, wow.
So he stayed on the grounds where those records were recorded, which is pretty cool.
That is. That's amazing.
And that guitar is equally as cool as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool.
Sorry to interrupt. I had to interject about Chris.
Yeah. But at this point, like, the crowd energy was really high and everyone was singing along, you know, with such fervor. And then they played Revenge, which lots of people loved.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, James got real cheesy. And he was like, do you have the hardwired cassette? do you have the hardwired tape? Do you have the hardwired CD? I mean, the download thing, it was kind of funny.
Oh, he's got to interject the dad jokes in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
So next was Moth, which the dancing flames were so hot that I felt like my eyebrows were getting singed. Like, I don't know how. Yeah, that must be so hot for them on the stage.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but the effect is incredible. Like, it's really cool. And that's another example of a song that I think is so much better live than on the album.
Oh, there's something about that song live. I mean, I saw four shows on the Hardwired tour, and they played that song every time I saw them. And, like, there's something about that song. I think it's an instant classic in their catalog.
Yeah,
and,
I think so too.
And just like the second they go into it, you know, even without the drones, and when I saw it on the stadium tour, you know, like you saw the dancing flame going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about that song that just, I think it's going to stand the test of time, and I think it's going to be in their set list for a long time.
I bet you're right. Yeah. And so then after that song, James interacted with the Snake Pit crowd, which is kind of nice. And then he went into his whole, there's a lot of love here. We care a lot. We're living the dream. We don't take it for granted. We don't care about religion or politics or what's between your legs. We care about music. Do you want heavy?
Yeah.
And then that's when he traded out Carl for a white guitar. And so right after he said, do you want heavy? He said, oh, this is a white guitar, which was kind of funny. and then
you said, you said it was light or white?
Light.
Okay.
He's like, this is a light guitar.
Yeah. Do you happen to remember, was he playing the camouflage guitar?
No, it was white.
It was white. White
but
and
his
light.
Comment was, yes, but his comment was, this is a light guitar.
Yeah. Because when they did Sabbath True in the U.S., I remember him playing the camouflage snake bite.
Oh, I think it was white. But his back was to me then, so.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't see.
You mean his butt was to you?
His butt was to me, yes. And so Sabbath True was phenomenal. It was so good.
Yeah,
it was just really heavy and really intense. And then came No Leaf Clover, which surprised everyone because they just played it in Amsterdam, mm-hmm. and a lot of us were predicting Fade. So.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm a huge Fade to Black fan, but we've been speculating over numerous episodes that they're doing a lot of these songs to kind of gear up for S&M 2.
For S&M, yeah.
No Leaf Clover is one of my favorite Metallica songs ever written. And
it's so good.
I mean, I covered it on one of our cover EPs, and I love it so much. And when I saw this set list in Cologne that you went to, I was so excited that you got to see this song live.
Yeah, me too. It was so good. It was just, like, we talked about chills. It gave me chills. It was really, really good.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. And it's just like, I love the song on the S&M 1 album.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's so good live without the symphony, too. It's just so good.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. I haven't seen it live personally, but I've seen, obviously, videos of it. And it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. So then, after we're coming down from Clover, it's time for the doodle. And Kirk and Rob come out, and they bring out the music stand for Rob.
Right.
But they didn't have the stand for Kirk. And so Kirk's, like, just, like playing a little Sabbath, like, waiting, you know, like, while they're waiting for it to come out. And then he's just starting to get visibly pissed off, you know?
Right.
And then somebody comes out and is like, hey, we don't have it. Because he was turning away from the crowd.
Oh, no.
While he's having the conversation in the snake pit. I could see I could make out what he was saying. And he's like, he says to Rob, he's like, they don't have it. And Rob's like, well, can you play it anyway? And he's like, I can play the beginning.
Uh-oh.
And so he just is kind of like faking it a bit, you know, because he didn't have the music.
So it looks like it was something called Viva Colonia.
Viva Colonia.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I looked up the lyrics in English because I was curious what it was about.
Yeah.
Listen to what it is. It's
okay.
The lyrics in English are, count us in. That's awesome. Viva Colonia. We love life, love and the zest. We believe in the good Lord and we always want to drink.
That sounds amazing. That kind of sounds like my life. Wow. Especially the word awesome.
I know. And it's in Kolsch. It's not in German. It's in like a local, it's in a regional dialect.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's some deep, that's a deep cut for a doodle.
Right?
Wow. Good for them.
Yeah, but it got a huge reaction from the crowd. Like, they were really excited, even though it was a little bit like, you know, it was a little bit of a rough start since Kirk didn't have his music. Yeah,
that's all right. Sounds like they pulled it off all right.
Yeah, they did for sure. And then Rob Solo, he teased Man Unkind and Orion.
Mm-hmm.
And so and during this part, they play like this, you know, this video clips of Cliff.
Right, yeah.
And this is, I think, kind of... Well, I wanted to discuss this with my new friends afterwards because I think it's awesome that they do the homage to him.
Sure.
But I wonder if Rob ever feels undermined by that. Like, you know, he's an incredibly accomplished musician.
I don't know. I mean,
he's part of the band now. Like,
he is. Yeah. He's now the longest standing Metallica bass player. But I'd imagine at this point, I mean, obviously, Cliff made such an impact on the band and was such an integral part of the band and is still part of the band in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd imagine getting hired in that band, he knew that going in. Not necessarily that James sat him down and said, by the way, you're going to be playing a bass solo with Cliff's, you know, clips of Cliff above you. I don't think that happened, but I think anyone that loves Metallica knows that Cliff will always be a part of the band. And even though Jason's my favorite bass player of Metallica, I mean, it says a lot that they're not doing Jason footage up there. I mean, obviously Jason's still alive, of course, but but he was such a big part of where they ended up going in that band. I mean, he helped lay the foundation for that band. And I think Rob, and again, this is all just my opinion here. I also think Rob is, like, to your point, such an accomplished musician that I think he recognizes the skill level that Cliff brought to that band and that he had as a musician.
Okay.
That I think to him, it's probably like he's into this day, 14 years, 15 years later in the band, he's like, you know what? Like, much respect. I tip my hat to this guy and I'm going to play his part and these fans are going to love it. And, it's, you know, I don't know. To me, maybe it's similar to on a very small level when I play around town and I cover a song, maybe it's my little tribute to that person, you know, to that artist, you know? So I don't know. That's just my two cents.
Yeah. No, I was just pondering it a little bit, you know? And so I was curious what other people thought.
I wonder, or he could be up there going like, can I just do my own bass solo, please?
Probably not. You know, like, I think but then at the same time, I'm like, you know, since there was like a lack of cohesion with Jason, I think that, you know, like, and that was kind of an issue. Like, I'm like, maybe if, you know, Rob feel adequately embraced. I hope he feels adequately included. And, you know, I hope he doesn't feel undermined by that.
I'd imagine he doesn't. I think he has a tremendous amount of respect for the band and especially for Cliff that it's probably an honor to be able to do that every night.
That's true.
That's my opinion. Take it or leave it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was curious what you thought.
Yeah. And again, that is my opinion as a musician of a long, very long time. And, you know, when you get to pay tribute to somebody, it is an honor.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I would imagine maybe what goes through Rob's head, but I could be wrong, but there you go.
Yeah. No. Okay. So next was Frantic, and all my new friends made fun of me because I labeled it the wrong name because I don't really listen to that album.
What did you write it down
I'm
as?
I'm not telling.
You have to say it now.
Nope. I'm not going to because it's embarrassing.
Oh, my God. Will you at least tell me after I stop recording?
No.
I won't put it on the show.
Okay. If you promise not to put it on the show.
I won't put it on the show. Okay. So we get into Frantic.
Okay, and there was a lot of cool pyro. They had like the pylons out in the, out in the stands with like flames going off, like out in the crowd, which is pretty cool, and off of the stage. You know, it's pretty exciting. Then came One, and then Master Puppets was a little bit rushed.
It was. Like okay.
The tempo was a little bit high. And, you know, it felt a little bit off. And I think, you know, I was like, are they playing? What I noticed was that the video kept rolling for like 15 seconds after they finished playing. So
they probably played it faster. The video kept going. That's a tough thing.
I don't know if I noticed that or if I said that it was rushed, and then my new friend Mike said that he noticed that the video kept rolling after they'd already finished.
A really good observation, though. Yeah. You know, for a band that doesn't play the tracks or a click track, their video content that you see on the screens, it is only as synced up as to how they're playing the song. So if in Cologne, if they're just feeling energetic and the adrenaline's going, and all of a sudden they bump into Puppets, and all of a sudden it's like way faster than normal, that's going to affect the content on the screen. And as you and your friend saw, because that content went further than the actual song, then they probably played a little faster.
Yeah. So Mike noticed that, but I had comments that it seemed like it was a little bit faster than normal. But, you know, also like when you said like being pumped up, they definitely seemed really cheerful on stage. Like, they're goofing around a lot, and, James was like pretending to like step on people's heads in the crowd, and he kicked Rob in the butt.
Man, so much butt talk in this episode.
I know.
That's okay. Listen, I'm cool with James kicking Rob in the butt.
Well, it was comical.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so then, you know, they moved to the front of the catwalk for Belle's Creep.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, that was really exciting and fun to see. But also when I was at Plane, but a little bit hard being in the snake pit because then their backs are all to me, but it's still cool having them right there, you know?
Oh, of course. Yeah. That's where the second drum kit comes up from, you know, under the riser.
It was really fun to watch Lars play from behind, like to have like, you know, such a good view of his, you know, antics.
Yeah. It's a literal behind the scenes view of what he's doing. It's really fun to see. Like I remember years ago, my first Metallica show I ever saw back on the Death Magnetic tour, I remember his riser would rotate, you know, much like it did on the on the arena shows in this tour.
Uh-huh.
And there was a certain point where his back was to me, and it was really cool to actually see not only his butt, but it was cool to see just kind of like what his feet were doing and like, you know, what was on his little on his little tray next to him, little details that you don't normally take note of at a big show.
And how he just keeps like jumping out of his seat and like playing standing up. Yeah. And, you know,
that's great.
That's fun to watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's like a goblin back there. You know, it's like fun to watch.
That's right. He is definitely a goblin.
But then after Creep, he was like spitting water out onto the snake pit.
He loves it.
And I didn't want any slutty rock star germs on me, so I moved away for that. I don't want anyone to spit on me.
I'm with you. I would rather not anybody spit on me ever.
Yeah.
Even if James Hetfield was like, can I spit in your face? I'd be like, can I just shake your hand instead?
Can I just see your hand?
Can I just go snowboarding with you in Vail instead?
Can I just ride the chairlift with you and not say anything?
Yeah, can we just talk about Harry Potter for an hour?
Let's talk about bees.
Yes, please.
So, but then next came Speak, which was so exciting.
Yeah.
There was so much crowd participation. Like, it was like, you must have been able to hear it outside of the stadium for like an impressive distance. It was really
I would imagine.
The crowd part.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to elaborate on that. There's so many parts in that song that are huge crowd participation parts, you know?
Yeah.
Everything from the chorus to the da 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 da, all that stuff.
Yeah. And everybody was really, really, you know, feeling it. It was intense.
That's great.
It was cool. Yeah.
So before you get into the encore, I want to ask you. So, you know, obviously the first slot of the encore set is rotating. What were you hoping for? Or did you care? You were, okay.
No. Yeah.
And you got it.
And that's what they put. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was good. And I thought it was interesting that James Hetfield changes his little vests, like, throughout the show, you know?
I love how you just called them little vests.
Yeah, because it's like for the beginning, he's like, he needs the one that says Papa Het, and then he needs more patches for the
right,
other songs.
Yeah.
Like, those are patchy songs. And then...
Patchy songs. I like that.
Yeah, he needs a lot of patches to play, you know, some of those later songs. And then at the end, but then he goes no vest for the encore.
Yeah,
and
man,
this time...
Classing it up.
Yeah, this time he came out in a tank top with, you know, his guns out. So.
Ooh,
but,
okay.
Yeah. But Spit Out the Bone was very polished. Like, it sounded really, really tight.
That's so good. That's good. I have not gotten to see that song yet, which I'm bummed about.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I'm envious of everyone that has gotten to see it.
Yeah. And then came Nothing Else Matters and Sandman, of course. But
right.
Nothing Else Matters was a huge sing-along. Like, and the best part was that in the snake pit, there's some dudes slow dancing, and I thought that was very sweet.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, like in their patchy vests, they were like, it was like, you know, an eighth grade dance.
I love that you call them patchy vests.
Yeah.
Most people call them a battle jacket, but Sasha calls them a patchy vest, which I might start using that actually. Yeah. My wife's like, are you going to wear your battle jacket? I'm like, no, I'm going to wear my patchy vest. But I do love the image of two metalheads in patchy vests slow dancing in the snake pit.
It was really sweet.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you have anybody? Did you have anybody to slow dance with?
No.
Oh.
No, but I was having, you know, I had some nice new friends that I was like swaying arm in arm with.
And that's good.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. You still had your new best friends. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then we went and hung out afterwards. But also some things that, you know, at both the shows, they did this thing where they zoom in on James's hand with the city pick in
yep.
his hand.
Oh, yeah.
And like the crowd goes nuts for that.
They
you
love
know,
it. Yeah.
Like yeah. So that was exciting. And then the other thing that I noticed is that the last time I saw them was in 1996, right? So,
okay.
And one of the things that I always loved, about James Hetfield was his rock star stance. Like, it's mm-hmm. so iconic. You know, how he's got, like, the one leg out and his, like, guitar is, like, part of his body. And
of course,
he, like,
yeah.
Hunches over the microphone and, like, glares, you know, and it looks really menacing. Well, now he stands straight up, and his legs aren't as far, you know, his aren't as wide. And I, like, wondered, is that because he's not as flexible as he used to be?
I mean, he's also, like,
dad bod thing,
55 years old at this point, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a lot of it, well, I mean, I definitely have noticed, as a guitar player myself, I have noticed that his guitar got a little bit higher. I mean, you watch videos from, like, 89 into the early 90s.
Yeah.
His guitar is, like, at his knees.
I know.
It's really low, which, of course, we would all love to see that, like, and he would, like, hunch over like he was this freaking warlock or something. But, like, you know, coming from personal experience, like, you can only do that for so long until it starts to really fuck up your back, you know?
Yeah, I just wondered if, like, a physical therapist was, like, you're going to have to adjust your stance.
You know, I would almost guarantee that happened at some point in his life in the last 10 to 15 years where he may have had some pain in his back or his legs or whatever, where it's like, well, you have been hunched over your whole career and you put a guitar on that weighs, let's say, 15 pounds. That's an extra bit of weight on there pulling you forward. And you're doing that for 2 or 3 hours a night. That's going to physically wear on you, you know?
Yeah.
But you know he's older dude. He's got the gray hair. He's got the Fu Manchu. He's Papa Het. He's at the dad jokes. I love
yeah.
it.
I do too.
I'm evolving with him, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I do too. I love it too. But I just like noticed that. I'm like, and I just like want you know. And I just wondered like, did someone tell him he needed to make adjustments, or did that just like happen naturally with age?
I'm sure his body told him at one point.
Yeah.
And not only like the way he stood and how low
there's
his guitar.
There's a reason nobody else stands like that. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, for years of being a guitar player in rock bands and stuff, or in my old metal band, like I wore my guitar real low and hunched over and stuff, and like you definitely felt it after you know a week straight of shows.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, and not only on top of the way you're standing and the weight of the guitar pulling you down, you're also moving your body in a way that isn't really that natural if you think about it.
Right.
A chiropractor would look at the way James Hetfield played in 1991 and say like, oh yeah, that's great for your back, sir.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, here's the thing I love about what you pointed out is that the way he wears his guitar now, a little higher, he stands up a little straighter. All that's doing is prolonging his body to keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's smarter. And it's, it, you know, it's like the same people that say, like, I wish he would sing like he did on Injustice for All. Well, if he kept singing like that his whole career,
we probably wouldn't
even have him anymore. So
right.
he's being smart. He's listening to his body. He's taking the proper steps to make sure that he can continue doing this, what he loves, you know, for a long time. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, me too, because I want to see a lot more shows.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Especially with your new best friends in Germany.
I know. Yeah. They're awesome.
I love, you know, listen, I love that through this whole episode that you made some great friends. You know, I'm sure you guys will stay in touch, you know, and again, it's just the power of this band. And not only is it that you went to the show by yourself and made good friends out of it, you know, in turn, like, you randomly stumbled upon our podcast and here we are talking about this experience, and that's a great thing. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, I stumbled on it cause I kept talking about Metallica to my significant other who doesn't like Metallica. And I was like, can you stop? And so then I looked for Metallica, you know, in my list of podcasts and found yours. And then it's like, you know, although I wasn't participating in the conversation, I was having the conversation I wanted to be having.
So. Yeah, totally. That's you know what? That's the whole point of what we're doing. We just,
it's fun to listen to. Thank you.
Oh, no, hey, our pleasure. These were the conversations we were having outside of a podcast even existing. And then we decided, well, I had this idea one day. It's like, hey, let's just record that, and then we'll put it out there and see if people like it, you know? So,
I'm glad you're doing that.
Well, hey, we're going to continue to do it for as long as we can, or, you know, and if the band stops, maybe we'll stop. Who knows? There's no time frame on this thing, and it'll go as long as it needs to go, is all I'm saying. But Sasha, thank you so much for doing this. This has been one of my most, you know, enjoyable Metal Tales episodes. Listen, you might need to start your podcast of your own. You've got a good voice, and honestly, you know, a lot of times the way we do these is we kind of, in a way, kind of direct the episode and kind of move it along and stuff. I've just been sitting here just chiming in the whole time. I feel like you were the host the whole time.
Really?
So my tip to you.
Thanks. Well, I've been like dying to talk about it, like as someone who would listen, because I've come back and everybody except for Tom, who I've been like texting with about it, has been like, okay, enough about Metallica already.
Right. Well, listen, I'm gonna upload this episode as soon as we're done here, and a lot of people will start listening to it. So plenty of people will hear what you just had to say, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it.
Thanks. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, yeah. Well, thanks again. And we're going to sign off, but as soon as I stop hitting record, you're going to tell me what you wrote down for Frantic. How about that?
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we hope you're enjoying the Metal Tales from the Road series. If you've been keeping up with us, then you already know that we've covered every stop on the 2018-2019 North American Arena Tour, and we look forward to catching up with all of our European friends later this year on the Stadium Tour overseas. And there's more! After the Stadium Tour, we are continuing the Metal Tales series for any Metallica show in the past. Maybe you saw one of the Orion Festivals. Maybe you were at the Channel in 1984 and Cliff Burton bought you a beer. Maybe you were at one of the 30th anniversary shows, or you just saw a regular-ass show in North Dakota somewhere. We want to hear from you. Since Ethan and I started Metal Up Your Podcast, we wanted to find a way for listeners to call in and share their stories. Well, this is it. To make yourself eligible for a future or past Metal Tales episode, please consider joining us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you not only get to come on the show as a guest, you also get both of our Cover Our World Blackened EPs, monthly giveaways like deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, posters, and other goodies. You get early access to our YouTube videos, and we also let you ask our guests like Ray Burton, Michael Wagner, Hailstorm, members of Slipknot, your very own questions. For what essentially amounts to 2 cups of coffee a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. For any of you on the ride with us, we love you, we thank you, peace and adios.
I